Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. An interactive exhibition for school children shines the light on how fair trade can help farmers and workers in the developing world get a better deal. Children and the media, a challenge for education. That's the theme chosen by Pope Benedict XVI for World Communications Day. We take a look at its implications. And Father Jim Brand recalls an episode of his childhood that changed his vision of the world. I was riding home on my scooter the other day when I noticed a poster advertising an interactive exhibition on fair trade. I took note of the venue and of the press person's telephone number, because I think buying fair trade products is one way we can really help make a difference to the lives of farmers and workers in some of the world's poorest countries. And I was curious about the initiative. The press person told me I was welcome to come along, but warned me, the exhibition is really for school children. It foresees a virtual journey with dressing up and role-playing.
Valentina and me, we tried to transfer the contents of fair trade in the exhibition in order to make the children participate and understand these contents by having fun.
That's Irene Fisco. She worked on the organizational aspects of the exhibition, whilst her colleague, Valentina Di Odoardo, was partly responsible for thinking up the project and took care of the animation. The two girls showed me around, and Valentina explained what happens when the children arrive. What do the children do? They get here?
They get here, and then we divide the class in three groups. One group they play, you know, to go to Ghana, another group to Pakistan, and the third group to Ecuador.
Each child is given a badge with a flag of the country he or she will be travelling to, and receives background information regarding the social and economic reality he or she will be dealing with.
They meet three actors that are special actors because they come from that country or that area. And these three actors tell them a story in first person as a producer of three products.
What products are they?
Yeah, banana for Ecuador, football for Pakistan, and cocoa for Ghana.
Each group is then shown into a role-playing area where the Ecuadorians and the Ghanaians are exploited farmers, working long hours for very little pay. Whilst in Pakistan, the children act out the sad lives of child workers, manufacturing footballs for the profit of multinational companies in the West.
And then they tell them the transformation of their condition from traditional trade to fair trade. And they tell them the change of their condition because they become active part of the process where they can decide how many hours they need to work, how does it cost the product. This in Ghana and in Ecuador.
In Pakistan, it's the arrival of an officer from the International Labour Organization that makes change possible.
So someone from the International Labour Organization comes to the factory,
yeah,
and
find out that there are children that are working. So tell them that they need to stop to work because they have rights, human rights for children, and they should go to school, play, and so on. And tell them that it's not fair, you know, that they are working there.
At this point, the journey continues and the children change their guise.
They go in another place where an animator tells them to transform themselves in products.
So they become a banana or some cocoa or a football.
That's right. And then they leave their countries to go to Europe. And they make this trip on a boat where there are a lot of other containers with the principal brands like Nike or whatever. This place represents the trip of these products. But at the same time, the space that the fair trade has in the global trade, which is very, 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 very small. So the children travel very tight, and the actor tell them nobody is going to buy you because you have no brand, or your brand, it's not known.
The problem is he's right.
Yeah. And then after this trip, they arrive in two locations. One is the supermarket or World Shop, which is a shop specialized in this product.
Valentina told me that once the children, who at this point are playing the part of a banana, a cocoa product or a football, find a place on the shelf of a supermarket or of a World Shop, they play a game in which they discover their fate. And that is whether someone will actually buy them or whether they will be left to rot away. Irene wraps it all up.
Actually, this is the end of the game, because they have been farmers or children at work. They have produced their products in an unfair and then in a fair way. They have traveled around the world, and they have been sold or thrown away in a workshop or in a supermarket.
The journey is over, but there's time for reflection and thought.
We have organized a space in which they can sit and talk with another operator about what they have lived and what they have learned. So they just talk about if they have had fun and if they have learned something. And they talk about what they generally buy.
Finally, each child is asked to leave a message to the consumer, expressing his or her own ideas on trade and exploitation.
Most of them, they write down buy fair products because they don't use children in labor, or this banana because there is no pesticide on it. But in the discussion, sometimes happen that a children say, like, yeah, okay, I understood everything. I understand that it's not fair, it's not right that children work, but I like Nike, you know?
But that's okay, says Valentina. The exhibition's aim is not to brainwash the children.
We just want to make them think. So maybe yesterday you didn't know that this shoe, it's made by children. Now you know. So maybe now you don't care, but thinking tomorrow or the day after, you maybe could change your idea. And maybe you will not buy anymore these products. That's it.
And that's really what CHIES is all about. CHIES, by the way, is the non-profit, non-governmental organisation both Valentina and Irene work for, the organisation behind the exhibition.
CHIES stands for Centre of Information and Education to Development. And this organisation aims particularly to the education to development, which is a very important part of education today, because it's important to inform children of what is going on in the world and to help them to confront it with a global world, with the other cultures in particular.
I asked Irene how fair trade is faring in Europe.
I think it's growing very much because awareness is growing. Recent studies made by economists has shown that the more and more people know about trade and about how it works and how it affects people's life, especially in the south of the world, the more they want to buy products of which they know they are not made by exploitation of workers or children. So awareness is growing, and also in the European institutions. In the last July, European Commission passed a resolution about fair trade to recognize a particular role to fair trade in the global trade, because it is a way to make social accountability more important in trade.
And wrapping up, Irene told me what the hope of all those involved in fair trade is for the future.
In the future, maybe fair trade will vanish because all trade will be fair.
And surely, that is the wish of many consumers as well, and something we can all work towards with ease. Next time you buy biscuits, tea, coffee, juice, fruit, or a pair of tennis shoes, ask yourselves, what is the true price of your purchase? Who is it who is really making the profit? And why not choose a label that is also a guarantee that at least some disadvantaged farmers and workers in the developing world are getting a better deal? Getting through to children with the right messages and the right values is really one of the fundamental challenges of our time. Pope Benedict XVI certainly thinks so, as the theme he has chosen for the next World Communications Day is Children in the Media, a Challenge for Education. I surfed the internet to gather some data and discovered that, generally speaking, in developed countries, children spend 6.5 hours with the media every day. By the time a child is 18 years old, he or she will witness some 200,000 acts of violence on television. That children are affected at any age, but young children are most vulnerable to the effects of media violence. Now, this is something we can all relate to. It's a pressing reality in a world of continual and loud media bombardment that reaches out to developing individuals being groomed to forge the future. I decided to talk to an expert.
The Clearinghouse is a UNESCO initiative in 1997.
Cecilia von Feilitzen is the scientific coordinator of the International Clearinghouse on Children, Youth and Media at Nordicum Göteborg University in Sweden, where she also lectures.
Then focus was more on violence on the screen, but now we have a widened perspective. We still focus much on media violence, but also on media education, for example, and other media activities for children and young people.
Cecilia was happy to speak to me, but warned the issue is an extremely vast and complex one.
I wanted to say that it is extremely important to raise awareness about children and media, and I really congratulate the Pope to have chosen this theme. Of course, media are extremely important in the lives of children. It of course, differs between different countries, but in many countries, children really live in a multimedia society with access to radio, television, internet, video, a lot of music, and sometimes books and newspapers and so on. And the media are very influential when it comes to our ideas and notions about other people and the close surroundings and the world.
These, she says, include many positive and formative influences, but also many negative ones.
So first, media influence our ideas, notions, experience, pleasures, motivations, and so on, and not so often our behavior. However, sometimes media also influence our behaviors. And, the most researched question is the one about media violence, for example.
Yes, that was what I was mentioning right at the beginning. And that too, Cecilia said, is a complex issue, to be analysed from many different perspectives.
We can differentiate between different kinds of influences. Small children, they often imitate from television, but they imitate a lot of things, not only violent things, because small children, they imitate adult behavior generally to learn. Then we have real aggression, and for a few children, especially those who have a not so harmonious environment, not good relations to the family, peers, the school, and so on, media can contribute somewhat to increased aggression. An important influence, not so much talked about, and that is fear. Sometimes children get scared by watching television or films and so on. And this is, of course, not good in the long run if there are not adults taking care of the child. But it's important to talk about what was scaring and so on. Because fear can, in the long run, lead to anxiety. And we can also get from media violence, exaggerated ideas about violence in the real world. People watching a lot of entertainment violence, they maybe think that there are more murders out there than it really is.
Let's talk about the other side of the medal. Media can also be very formative and important in children's education and development. Is this concept part of the broadcaster's guidelines in producing programs for children?
This is very different in different countries, if it's included in the broadcaster's guidelines, for example. We had a study in Europe some years ago. However, they found that in the Nordic countries, there were often guidelines about education. In many southern countries in Europe, there were unfortunately more and more imported cartoons and not so many educative or formative programs. So it differs very much between countries. However, children learn a lot, and they also learn from entertainment programs. They like watching soap operas and reality television and so on, and they learn how to behave when they become older. And they're very interested. You know, children are not only watching children's programs. When they are very small, maybe, but very soon, they start watching adult programs also.
But Cecilia reassured me, it's not all doom and gloom. New trends in media production are encouraging signs of social accountability.
There is a trend now with media literacy education in and also outside school within voluntary organizations. And it's very important, I think, here that children from early age learn to handle the media themselves. That is, that you include them in media production. Because when they start to produce media content themselves, they come to reflect very much about the content, and they can look through it. They can see that it's a construction of other people, of the world, and so on. This is a kind of protection, actually. It must be combined with critical analysis, talk about different media products, but if children are allowed also to themselves make radio programs, take part in video films, make websites and so on, this will help. This will also contribute to their media awareness and therefore also to some kind of protection.
And now Father Jim Brand, spiritual director of the Pontifical Beda College, thinks back to a childhood episode that changed his view of the world.
Hello everybody, it's Father Jim again. In the last 2 weeks, as it's the month of November, I was thinking with gratitude about the Holy Souls and about how united we are with them in the Lord and the gratitude we owe them and how beneficent they are to us all with their prayers and support as we carry on our way. And they've arrived at their destination. Well, it'll soon be December.
I'm sure all the shops and Woolworths and everyone else has been preparing for Christmas since August. I love Christmas. It brings back all sorts of childhood memories. When I was 5, in 1940, there was a terrific snow storm in the countryside in England, and we had carols, and in those days before we were bombed, we could go around with little lanterns calling at people's houses and singing carols. But I'd like to share with you something that happened in 1941 or 42, at Christmas time. And every Christmas, this memory comes back to me. I'm sure all of us can look back and see some event in our lives that changed us. Well, this changed me completely. My father was away in the army. My mother was rather a cold person. I had two younger sisters. We lived next to my granny and grandfather, and my grandmother was the person I was closest to as a child. She loved me and I loved her. She spoilt me to bits too. But I wasn't allowed to talk to village children, because they were the wrong class. You see, I was brought up in a snob family without much to be snobbish about. So I was rather lonely, because my grandfather was a rather frightening person who waved his stick at us. But in the field next to our little house, there came some German prisoners of war. They came from their camp in Tunbridge Wells. They had green uniforms with a yellow diamond sewn on their jacket and pants, so that if they ran away, they'd be recognised. And I used to go through a hole in the hedge and picked up potatoes with them. It was my grandfather's potato field. They loved me. I was rather a beautiful, fair-haired child. Could have been a little German boy. I don't know if I reminded them of their young son at home or their younger brother. But every time I was caught by Nanny, the nursery nurse we had, I used to get the hairbrush for what she called fraternising with the enemy. But being a naughty boy, I always got through that hole in the hedge. And I felt really loved by these German prisoners of war. In the nursery, Nanny had some maps on the wall. And she'd have little flags, German swastikas, and then eventually some Russian flags, and then British flags, and then American flags later in the war. And she'd be listening to the news, and as the Germans moved further into Russia or something, her German flags would move on the map and get stuck in them. And she used to make rude remarks about the Germans. And being naughty, I used to say, three cheers for the Germans, and again got the hairbrush. Well, Christmas, I think it was 1941 or 42, I was in the choir of the local church. The choir consisted of three ladies, two gents, an arthritic organist, and me, aged 6 or so. I had a wonderful little voice. And at midnight mass, 1941, two truckloads of German prisoners of war came. And I remember looking over the balcony, seeing them all there in their uniform. And I thought to myself, I'm sad, why can't we invite them for Christmas lunch? How awful not to be home for Christmas. And of course, as soon as I had that thought, my bottom started tingling. You get the hairbrush. Such treasonable thoughts. Fraternising with the enemy, Christmas lunch, rubbish. And while I was feeling sad, 4 German prisoners of war came up to the choir loft. I can still see them now. 2 tall, fair ones, 1 short, fair one, and 1 short, dark one. And one of them said to the Hungarian choir master, would you allow us to sing a Christmas carol for you at the offertory? And to my delight, the choir master said, yes. Well, at the offertory, they sang 3 verses of Stille Nacht, Silent Night, 2 tenor, 2 bass, and 4 parts. I can still hear it now, and that was the moment I knew I was musical. And I occasionally play the piano in concerts. It's nearly often German music, Schubert, Beethoven, Mozart. Because South German people have only got to blow their nose and it'll be in tune. They couldn't make an unmusical noise if they tried. Well, during Mass, the short dark one kept winking at me. And quite frankly, I wasn't used to anyone making any fuss of me. I was rather a lonely child. I remember turning round and seeing, what was he smiling at? Couldn't see anyone. There was just a void behind me. So he must be smiling at me. So being a flirt at an early age, I smiled back, winked back at him. And, you know, it gave me that very nice warm feeling. And after communion, he came up to me with a little paper bag. It had a Thai food tea advertisement on it, I remember. And he pressed this into my hand. It was his Christmas sweet ration. I'll never forget, it was one small Mars bar, four toffees and four gobstoppers. And I took these home marvelling. The enemy gave me his Christmas sweet ration. Mummy didn't, Granny didn't, Nanny didn't, those who love you didn't. But the enemy gave me his Christmas sweet ration. As soon as I got home, they were confiscated. Can't have you going soft on Germans. Well, I took a vow at the age of 6 or 7. I think it's really the only vow I've ever kept properly. Don't believe a word adults tell you. They tell you a pack of lies, like Germans eat babies, Russians look like bears, Irish are stupid, Poles are neurotic, you know, all this nonsense, stereotypes. I said, I'm not going to believe what they say, these adults. I've got to find out everything for myself. So when I went to boarding school, I smiled at the Jesuits to keep them happy. I didn't believe a word they said. Which meant I was a slow learner, but a very accurate learner. Now that German prisoner of war changed my life. I could have become a terrible snob. You know, Jews don't talk to Samaritans and all that stuff. He taught me to be able to cross all boundaries in life. For instance, our Lord went to Caesarea Philippi. That was out of bounds. He could chat up the lady at the well, had Mary Magdalene round his feet, John in his bosom. He could go through cemeteries. And this prisoner of war taught me I could cross all these boundaries of race, class, creed, culture. If he's still alive, and I've never forgotten him, if he's still alive, well, I'm 71, maybe he was 18 at the time, he might be 83, 84. He will never know in this life how much good he did. She transformed me. If he's in heaven, he'll be having the most wonderful reward. Our Lord said, you'll have a huge reward, even for a cup of water. I can't imagine what reward he's getting for a Mars bar, four toffees, and four gobstoppers. I wish I could meet him. I'm sure I never will in this life. But I would love to meet him in heaven. And then we'll be able to thank him. Thank him for being an instrument of grace that opened the whole universal world to me. That is why I love Christmas. Amen.
Laudetur Jesus Christus.